Welcome to session 121 of the Bible in a Year commentary. If you started this series on the 1st of January, then today should be the 1st of May. Today we'll be looking at Isaiah 49 to 51 and Psalm 119 verses 65 to 96. But so far in Isaiah, we've read through the first half of Isaiah focused on the judgment and future hope of Jerusalem, the nations, and then the judgment on Israel's leaders for who they put their trust in. Through these different preachers and visions, we've gathered a series of images. God was about to pour judgment on the Israelites for their wickedness and corruption. This punishment was described like God laying an axe to a tree and just a stump remaining. It was destruction intended to purge and purify. Out of the remnant of his people, this tree stump, God would raise up a branch from the line of David, who would be a king who reigned over the earth and brought peace. Focusing on the foreign nations, we got mention of a day of the Lord. On this day, God will bring judgment, waging war on evil and wickedness. He will destroy powers that set themselves up against him, whether they be human kings or spiritual beings. These foreign nations are judged for their pride, oppression, and wickedness. Isaiah specifically mentions Babylon, Assyria, Philistia, Moab, Cush, also known as Ethiopia, Egypt, and Tyre. Focusing on Israel's leaders, Isaiah pointed out that the judicial leaders, the priests, and even some of those who claimed to be prophets were actually proud drunkards who put their trust in their own power and authority rather than in God. But through these preachers, Isaiah highlights some key ideas. The Israelites are not to turn to these foreign nations for support and protection. God is in control, and we use all of this for his purposes. Eventually, even these foreign nations will be brought into God's future kingdom. In that time, all people will celebrate, feast, and worship God, led by a king who will bring peace and flourishing. Then we started the second half of Isaiah, written to the people after the exile, giving them a new hope. It was God that led other nations to do what they did, not those nations' own strength or their own gods. God was always in control and will lead his people to flourish again. We got the introduction of someone God calls my servant, saying, I have put my spirit upon him, he will bring forth justice to the nations. So Isaiah 42 verse 1. This servant is contrasted with Israel, who is described as a blind servant because they continued to reject God. As God leads the foreign nations against each other, ultimately, he will still see all nations put under his authority, worshipping him. Let's jump in with today's reading, Isaiah 49 to 51. Yesterday, we finished God's initial call to his people that there's still hope and he still cares for them, found at the second half of the book. Next, he focuses in on a character we've mentioned before, the one he calls my servant. In this section, we get this unknown figure, God's servant, speak for himself three times. Then each time he finishes, we get a message for Jerusalem, for God's holy city, Zion. We open with a figure talking, and we only realise a few verses in who it is when he mentions that God called him my servant. Next, he says how God has called him to gather Israel back to God, but more than that, to be a light to all nations and gather them back to God too. Then he mentions how God describes him as one deeply despised, abhorred by the nations. That's Isaiah 49 verse 7. Whoever this servant is, he will be hated by the people of Israel, but there will come a time when kings will bow down to him because of God. God has given the servant to be a covenant to the people. So Isaiah 49 verse 8. And they will set free the prisoner, feed the hungry and the thirsty, have pity on and lead God's people. Then this first message about the servant ends with a call to sing for joy. For God is going to comfort his people and have compassion on them. Then the focus switches to Zion. Zion is declaring that God has given up on them. But God challenges them, asking if a mother can forget her own children. God has not forgotten his people. He's engraved them on the palms of his hand, so he will remember them forever. He tells them how he will bless them abundantly. They will be so prosperous and have so many children, for children were a sign of prosperity, that when they go back to Jerusalem, there will not be enough room for all of them and they will have to build a bigger city. He is going to once again gather all of his children from out of the nations that they were carried to, and restore them to their land. He will also attack those who oppress his people. Then he reminds his people of the failures that damaged the relationship initially. He reminds them he divorced them as a nation and sold them over to other nations. This was all because of their sin. But he reminds them that just as he sold them into slavery, he is more than powerful enough to redeem them out of slavery. Take note of this. The Lord is described here as a divorcee. He gave his people a divorce letter and sent them away. Now, we know that the ultimate goal is to have all people restored to him. So there's still redemption in this divorce process, but it's noteworthy nonetheless. The Lord's relationship with his people reached a point where it couldn't continue because his people were unwilling to work on it and continued to reject him. Then, in contrast with the disobedience of God's people, we jump back to read about the obedience of the servant. The servant declares that each morning he wakes to God speaking to him. He was not rebellious. He did not shy away from what God had told him to do. Because of this, God has protected him, so he will not be put to shame. Who can come against him when God has got his back? The servant then tells people to trust in God. Though it may feel like you're walking in darkness sometimes, trust that God will protect you and keep you. Don't try to make your own light like a torch or fire. Don't trust in your own ability to find a way, because those people will end up in torment for not trusting in God. And then we once more focus on Zion. They are encouraged to once again seek God, to remind themselves of the God of their ancestors, because God is there to comfort them. God speaks to them and asks that they listen to his words, because the law that he is bringing leads people into salvation and righteousness, and it's for all the earth. For those that listen to and obey God's law need not fear their enemies, for God will do away with them so that his righteousness and salvation will be forever. The next section is a small prayer to God, recognizing the great things that God has done in the past. The speaker says, "Was it not you, God, who cut Rahab into pieces, who pierced the dragon?" That's Isaiah 51 verse 9. Rahab was a mythical sea dragon. And so this verse, along with the verse after it, is just a metaphorical way of talking about the time God split the sea so the Israelites could leave Egypt. In other words, God led his people out of slavery before and he can do it again. So God promised to once again comfort and protect his people. He then tells his people to wake up. Yes, they drank the cup of God's wrath. Yes, they were devastated and left helpless, but God has now taken his wrath away from them. Now he is pouring out on the enemies of his people. That's Isaiah 49 to 51. Now let's jump in with Psalm 119 verses 65 to 96. We are continuing on with Psalm 119. This psalm isn't attributed to anyone in particular and falls into the category of wisdom psalm. Each stanza has 8 verses each, and each verse within a stanza starts with the same letter of the Hebrew alphabet. With 22 stanzas, we have a different stanza for each letter of the Hebrew alphabet. In many ways, this psalm can be seen as the ABCs of biblical wisdom. Here's a summary of the structure, but I would recommend checking out the written version of this commentary in the description to see the structure properly for yourself. We have verses 65 to 72, Tet. You have dealt well with your servant, O Lord. Verses 73 to 80, Yod. Your hands have made and fashioned me. Verses 81 to 88, Kof. My soul longs for your salvation. Verses 89 to 96, Lamed. Forever, O Lord, your word is firmly fixed in the heavens. In this ninth stanza, verses 65 to 72, the psalmist acknowledges that the Lord did right by them by humbling them. The Lord allowed them to experience the consequences of their actions so that they could turn and choose his ways. Because of this, the psalmist now clings to the Lord's words, even when arrogant people attack them for it. And so the psalmist is grateful for this process. Through it, they have come to realize that the teachings of the Lord are greater than any riches or wealth. In the 10th stanza, verses 73 to 80, the psalmist links the Lord who provides teaching and commands with the Lord who creates. It is because the Lord has formed them, he knows how to guide the psalmist in his ways. It is from a place of love and understanding that the Lord has brought the psalmist through these trials to teach them. So the psalmist asks that the Lord continues to show them mercy and continues to guide them in righteousness. The 11th stanza, verses 81 to 88, slips into lament. The psalmist is struggling. Their soul languishes and their eyes fail. There are those who judge and persecute them, and others who set traps for them. But despite all this, the psalmist continues to hold on to the Lord's teaching as they are unfailing. They cry out to the Lord to help them and save them so that they can continue to keep the Lord's ways. Then in stanza 12, verses 89 to 96, we focus on the eternal nature of the Lord's teaching. It is through his ways that the Lord first established the earth and continues to hold things in place today. It was the Lord's law that kept the psalmist going this far, and it's his law that will keep them going forward. So the psalmist will hold on to them in the face of their enemies. Everything else is flawed and weak, but the Lord's commands are perfect.